Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk about pets, baby. Let's talk about ticks and fleas. All the fun things that we see. Smart tips and tricks guaranteed.
Hey, pet friends. Welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk About Pet. I am proof that you don't have to want to be seen to want attention. I'm Nessie. You're not just hearing things. She's that memorable. It's Echo.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one.
A little bit corny.
That's what I like. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled to be recording today because we are interviewing my very best friend, whom I've mentioned on previous episodes, graduated from University of Florida in 2017 and is a board certified veterinary ophthalmologist. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Stacy Spears.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been really excited to say that line.
You've mentioned her on here before?
Yeah, in many previous episodes.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding. Oh, you're joking. I was like, you edit them, you know.
Yes, I do.
So to our listeners, it might sound strange that we're interviewing a doctor who treats eye disease for our episode on diabetes today. But there is a connection between diabetes and eye health. Stacy, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So I have a little bit of a history with treating diabetes from when I used to do ER prior to being an ophthalmologist. I dealt with a lot of diabetic crises, but now as an ophthalmologist, most of the time that I'm seeing diabetes is in my cataract patients. There's actually a huge number of diabetic patients that end up having diabetic cataracts. So when we're considering cataract surgery, a huge majority of those patients are diabetic patients.
Do you guys want a fact?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Is it a fun fact or like just a fact?
It's an interesting fact. It's neither fun nor sad. It's just I found it really interesting. Maybe it's fun. Okay, let's try this again. Do you guys want a fun fact?
Sure.
I'd love a fun fact.
There was a study done in 2022 by the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine about diabetes in dogs in the U.S. And they looked at 960 dogs across the U.S. for this study with both juvenile and mature onset diabetes. And it found that 32.6% of dogs in this study were diagnosed in the winter as opposed to other times of the year. And it also found that 45.5% of dogs in this study were diagnosed in the northern U.S. as opposed to other geographical locations. They looked at a number of other different factors as well, but I just thought that was really fascinating because the study mentions that human diabetes has been associated with high altitude and fewer sunshine hours, cold climate, and just kind of winter in general. So it's just really interesting to me that there's also a possible connection to those things with dogs too.
That is crazy. I never thought too hard into temperature.
I don't know how much temperature necessarily has to do with it. I know at least in humans, and this we're going to talk about this a little bit more when we talk about dogs versus humans, but a lot of factors that go into human diabetes can be associated with lifestyle, and definitely exercise is a really, really important way that you can reduce your risk of developing diabetes. So I can imagine if you're in a climate where people tend to be outdoor a lot more, they tend to exercise a lot more, maybe it's a reduced risk factor. Kind of guessing though, because with scientific literature, you never can really just prove causation from correlation. So it'd be really interesting to know what the causative factors are there.
Yeah. So let's start with what is diabetes? I know that we often will refer to it as one of the metabolic diseases, but like, let's start with what does metabolic disease mean?
Means your sugar's whack.
That's pretty accurate. I don't know. Can that just be the answer? Because I think that sums it up really well.
Just all metabolic disease means your sugar's whack?
I mean, definitely diabetes, but to some degree, yeah, metabolic disease, your sugar whack. So metabolic disease is a really broad category of disease, and it encompasses a ton of different things. But kind of at its most basic, it's a disease that affects metabolism, being how you convert sugar into energy. So diabetes is a huge component of that because that primarily has to deal with how does sugar get into the cell. So it can be metabolized, meaning how does sugar get into the cell so we can derive energy from it. There's other metabolic disorders that we deal with in dogs all the time, hypothyroidism being another really, really big one. That's a hormonal disorder and an endocrine disorder, but thyroid hormone goes into the speed that you metabolize and, you know, so many other things. So it's a pretty big category, but diabetes is definitely one of the bigger diseases that we end up treating in that category.
So what actually is diabetes?
Diabetes is a disease where there is a problem at the insulin level with getting sugar into the cell. And there's a couple different types of diabetes, and that type of diabetes largely is relating to if you are not making enough insulin, or you're not making insulin at all, or if your insulin and your insulin receptors are not working very well. And they break that down into type 1 and type 2 diabetes in people.
Do they do the same with dogs?
We definitely use the type 1 and type 2 nomenclature a bit. It's not a direct crossover. Dogs tend to have a diabetes that's more like type 1 diabetes because they need insulin to be treated, whereas cats tend to fall into a type 2 where they can be treated with some of the same oral medications that they use in humans. And they also can be treated with insulin, but big difference being that cats can technically go into remission, whereas dogs, that's not really a realistic goal for their treatment. One of the big differences between dogs and cats is dogs are going to have a problem actually producing their insulin. And then cats are going to have more of a problem with insulin resistance, where their insulin just doesn't work very well.
My question is, where is the insulin produced?
Insulin's produced in the pancreas. It's one of many functions that the pancreas is really important for. But primarily what insulin does and why it's so important is it's the key that unlocks the cell to let glucose go from the bloodstream into the cell. So when you eat food and that sugar is absorbed and it's carried around your bloodstream, somehow it's got to go from the bloodstream into all of the different tissues where it can then be metabolized into energy. That happens through these little channels called glucose channels, and those channels are unlocked with insulin. I kind of think of it as you have this big city, and you have all these people going to work and all these commuters that are driving down the highway to get to their offices where they're doing all their work. And so all those commuters and all those employees are the sugar. And when they get into their office building, they have to have a doorman use a key card to let them in. And when you don't have enough doormen, or you don't have a key system that works well, or your keypad is broken, those doormen can't let the commuters into the office buildings to do work. So that really causes two problems, right? Because you get a traffic problem. You've got all these people out on the roads that can't get into their destination. But then you also have these empty office buildings where no work is happening, and your infrastructure and your city starts to fall apart because there's no work being done. There's no productivity. So if you think about, you know, the dog diabetes versus the cat diabetes, or type 1 versus type 2, you've got in type 1, not enough doormen where those doors aren't opening. And then in type 2, you've got doormen that are using those key cards so much that the key card system ends up breaking on them, and they're using more key cards and you're getting more doormen out, but people aren't getting into the buildings. So we can kind of relate that to, is the pancreas not working and it's not making enough insulin? Or do we have an issue of insulin resistance where insulin can be created, but after a while, because it's being produced so much, it starts to not work as well on the receptor. Then the body has to make more insulin. Eventually, you do that process long enough, you can actually have some damage to the pancreas and then end up in a situation where the pancreas just isn't producing insulin at all either. We see that with advanced states of the type 2 diabetes in humans. We can see cats get to that level where cats have to have their insulin supplemented. But if you're dealing with more of the type 2 diabetes, you're dealing more with that insulin resistance factor. The good news is that sometimes that can actually be put in remission.
That's a great analogy, and it makes it very easy to understand.
Good. That's one of my favorites, because diabetes is kind of tricky. You're sitting there like, okay, what's the big deal with glucose being so high in the bloodstream. And it's like, well, there are problems with glucose being high in the bloodstream, but some of the bigger problems really just have to do with the fact that you need glucose to live. And if glucose can't get to its destination, the body is just not going to be healthy.
So actually, we have a review if you guys are ready.
Ready.
I did the whole gambit of diabetes-related products for our reviews today. Do we have a theme for our reviews?
Famous dog characters.
Okay. I'm a big fan of famous dogs.
Good.
And we're starting with...
He's my favorite.
Is your favorite?
Yeah. It might be because I've always had a weird crush on Shaggy. The man loves his dog.
That's fair.
I didn't learn until recently that he was even a Great Dane.
What did you think he was?
Just a big dog.
Oh, okay.
Our first review from
Dooby Dooby Doo
is for Hill's Prescription Diet Glucose Support, the cat one.
Very nice. A good product.
Yeah. It is a 1-star review. Scooby was not happy with it.
Scooby was not happy with the cat diabetic food. That tracks.
1-star. It's called, please cancel my subscription. There is no way to cancel it. Please help.
Oh, no.
Oh,
well. The product is fine, but I now have too much of it and I wish to cancel the subscription. It is impossible to do. Please help me.
Oh, that poor person.
To be fair, I have had similar struggles on Amazon.
Trying to cancel.
The same Cascade box keeps showing up like every other week.
Oh, no. Is that why you have like 300 of these like quail egg boxes?
Oh, that
a lot of boxes.
Is a lot of quail egg boxes. Okay, so that was because I found a website that had the button quail cartons, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get like cartons that are actually made for button quails. That was the only thing I was buying. One, they had a minimum order of 100, and I was like, well,
oh,
that's just that. And they're made of paper pulp, so they're like stupid cheap. But then I was like, I can't be a weirdo and just buy button quail cartons, so I'm gonna buy the normal quail egg cartons too, because I'm being super proactive about my quail egg situation. So the reason that there's 100 of them is because there was a minimum order and it was like dirt cheap, and so yeah, there's a lot.
So you cannot blame that on it.
No, that was not Amazon, that was eggcartons.com.
That's funny.
I thought they'd be good to ship, and I thought they would be good for like if I'm selling quail eggs at the chicken swap.
Yes.
See, I'm thinking ahead.
I feel her pain because she sounds like she's panicking at this point. Like her cat can't eat this much food and it's just like piling up. And it's not like she can just give it to other people with cats because it's a diabetic formula. So she's just like, what am I going to do
set for
with
life.
This closet of cat
That's
food?
Hilarious.
It's always terrible when food goes rancid on YouTube, because I've had that happen with pet food. And that's a legitimate worry.
The dry food?
I've had dry food go rancid.
Oh, man. Poor Scooby.
Poor Scooby.
Poor Scooby and his diabetic cat treats. There's been some look into, can we identify sort of a pre-diabetes in dogs? And that has not come up to be very fruitful. You can also have other types of diabetes, or diabetes that happens that doesn't really fit well into the type 1 and type 2 category. For instance, if you had an animal that had pancreatic cancer and their pancreas is not working, and their pancreas is damaged to the point that it can't produce insulin, you know, yeah, that's a not enough insulin problem, but it's not the same underlying pathology as a typical dog that has diabetes.
Do other mammals tend to get diabetes, or other species of pet farm animals even?
I bet that monkeys do.
Oh.
Diabetes in horses.
Really?
You've got to give so much insulin to a horse.
So I would say if you have a pancreas, you can end up having a dysfunction of that pancreas and you can end up with diabetes. And so there are numerous reports of different more exotic species developing diabetes. There is a type of diabetes that we see in horses called equine metabolic syndrome that ends up being an issue with insulin dysregulation as well. So yeah, just because you're a dog or a cat or person doesn't mean that you're the only one that can get diabetes.
Would they wind up with a horse get like a diabetic cataract, or do horses not get cataracts?
Horses definitely get cataracts. Diabetic cataracts is definitely something that we see very commonly in dogs. It has also been reported in people. So the basis of a diabetic cataract is it's a buildup of essentially sugar within the lens that becomes metabolized in such a way that that sugar can't get back out of the lens. And just like you stick a salt shaker out during a humid day and it's going to draw in water, you get sugar within those lenses and that's going to draw in water. We do see that more commonly in dogs as compared to really any other domestic species that I'm aware of, but I do know that it's been reported in humans. Dogs are much more inflammatory compared to horses and much more inflammatory compared to cats and even much more inflammatory compared to rabbits.
Oh, I thought rabbits were the most.
No, dogs are, in my experience and just in general, dogs tend to be much more inflammatory. Horses tend to have a lot less inflammation after their cataract surgery than dogs do.
Have you ever treated other species for diabetes, or do you know about diabetes in like birds or fish or something?
Diabetes has been reported in birds. There's been some, especially some studies using fish as a model for diabetes. But my experience has all been with dogs and cats.
I couldn't imagine giving my fish an insulin injection.
Yeah. Like, how do you manage fish diabetes?
That's now wild. Now you have fully gotten outside of my realm of expertise.
Actually, since we're talking about fun stuff like fish insulin, we'll talk about Vetsulin. I have a review. And who is our review from?
This one is going to be from Lassie.
Lassie, did you find Timmy in the well? Is that who Lassie did?
That is Lassie, yeah.
Lassie? Come on, Lassie.
Wow. Okay. So this is for Vetsulin. It is the veterinary form of insulin. I have for us a very exciting 4-star review from Lassie. Good product, slippery label.
Don't you hate that?
I do. Vetsulin never fails to do what it's designed to do. My big orange guy, in parentheses cat, has his diabetes controlled. I'm very glad they clarified that big orange guy was cat.
Too many carrots, a little too long in the tanning booth.
I appreciate the distinction.
But who at this company?
That was perfect timing.
Did you get that? That was great.
That was wonderful.
She meowed perfectly. But who at this company decided it was a good idea to make the label on the bottle out of slippery paper? I dropped it once on a soft surface, thank goodness, while trying to shake it, and I've almost dropped it several other times. I've had to wrap a small amount of masking tape over the label. It can still be seen, though. There's more traction with fingertips and less chance of dropping the bottle now. So Vetsulin, maybe rethink your label and change the type of paper you use.
I want to know, it says more traction with fingertips, as opposed to what? Were they trying to shake it with their toes or something?
I think once she added the masking tape, it had more traction for her fingertips.
Like, put it in your pocket and just kind of do the hokey pokey?
You know,
I love that.
She sounds like a problem solver. Seems like she figured it out in the end.
She did. But she would like for them to come up with a solution instead of it being on her. Because, like, though she can read the label through her masking tape, like, it's not ideal.
Very understandable.
I mean, also, it sounds like she's dropped this bottle a lot.
I mean, they should get an extra star for that bottle not breaking.
Yes, that's true. I did come across another product in lieu of this. It sent me down a rabbit hole. It's a little like silicone protector that you put on the bottle so that if you do drop it, it doesn't break. I have a review for that for later. Lassie, you should use human fingers instead of dog paws, and you may have better results.
That was the problem the whole time.
The dog paws are not made for slippery labels.
No. Let's talk about why diabetes is a problem. What happens when the blood glucose gets too high?
Yeah, so glucose being high becomes a problem really when it's quite high. So you can end up with issues just from glucose in and of itself being too high in the bloodstream. There's a condition called hyperosmolar hyperglycemia, which is when that sugar just becomes highly concentrated in one area, it's going to want to draw water with it. So you can end up with a situation of a lot of sugar in the bloodstream, making that bloodstream kind of thicker, and then drawing more water into the bloodstream, which creates a condition of being dehydrated. Also causes a lot of electrolyte imbalances, and some of those can be really dangerous, particularly when you're dealing with potassium, specifically because potassium can lead to heart arrhythmias if it's not in the right concentration. So you get problems from just the fact that the glucose is high. But then kind of like with our city analogy, when you're not getting the employees into the workspace, you're not getting sugar into the cells where it has to be metabolized, where it's broken down into energy, you end up in an energy deficit. So you start having really severe weight loss. There's muscle loss associated with it. The body's falling apart because it's in a relative state of dehydration. So you end up in an energy deficit and the body is essentially in a state of starvation.
Is that why that when you have a pet who's diabetic, they are constantly drinking and in turn peeing more, and it has a bit of a sweet smell to it?
All of those things are going on. The classic signs of diabetes that most pet owners are going to pick up on is they're going to notice their pet is really hungry and losing weight despite being really hungry and seemingly eating all the time. And they're going to notice that their pet's urinating a lot and then drinking a lot of water. So just like some of those electrolyte imbalances and the high glucose in the bloodstream relating into water regulation, losing more water, you can also have that glucose that's building up in the urine, drawing water in with it. So those dogs are going to be urinating a lot of really dilute urine, and then they're thirsty because they're trying to replace what they lost.
What happens then when the blood glucose gets too low?
It depends a little bit on if your blood glucose is low because you've gotten an insulin overdose, or if your blood glucose is low because you're not eating enough. Essentially, the body needs to have this kind of regular balance and this regular ratio of fluid that's in the cells versus fluid in the bloodstream. And so your blood glucose being too low is also going to be something that goes into your body being at an energy deficit. The most common things that we're going to see are weakness and lethargy. And that's what owners will pick up on pretty quickly if their pet's glucose goes too low, is they'll notice that their pet just becomes very lethargic. The important thing is that if you have a pet that's diagnosed with diabetes, talking to your veterinarian and making sure that you have a plan for what do you do when you think the glucose is too high? What do you do when you think it's too low? How are you actually measuring that? What signs are you looking for? And then making sure that whatever it is you do to treat those things is a plan that you and your veterinarian have come up with together.
You need to come say hello. Come up, all the way. This is hello.
Huh? He's going down. He is a very good boy today.
He looked like he just melted.
He did a little bit. Just a little bit.
We can share a picture of him if you would like.
Yeah, he's a good boy. I got some good pictures of him. He got his novice standard agility title. Now he's squeaking about it. And then he got a qualifying score for open, so in the next level. Diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA, or sometimes what we call a diabetic crisis, is a state where the body has been starved so much from the glucose that it needs for its energy source that it starts to break down other things. So we know that the places that the body gets energy from, if it can't get it from its favorite source, which is sugar and carbohydrates, it's going to go after fat that's stored in the body. It's going to go after muscle that's stored in the body. And specifically, when fat is used as a source of energy, something is created as a byproduct, and that's ketones. And ketones are slightly acidic. This is actually when people start trying to get into ketosis for weight loss. This is the mechanism that they are exploiting, for lack of a better phrasing. They're using this process of using your fat as an energy source rather than something that you're eating. That is a normal part of how the body is supposed to function. But when it happens too much in an inappropriate way, there are so many ketones that the body becomes very acidic. The bloodstream becomes very acidic. When your bloodstream has an inappropriate pH balance and that pH is too low, electrolytes start to get out of whack, because electrolytes are little ions that have an electrical charge. And so they're moving between cell membranes and in and out of the bloodstream to try and regulate the pH in the bloodstream. And so you end up with these electrolyte imbalances that worsen the symptoms that you're already seeing, but they cause massive lethargy, massive dehydration. They can cause really bad arrhythmias that are all very life-threatening. So when I was seeing diabetic patients and diagnosing patients as diabetic for the first time, it's usually because no one knew that pet was diabetic. And they got into a place where they are coming to me in ER in this crisis. And that's where I've had the most conversations with owners about, what does it look like to manage a dog that has diabetes? And is this something that's realistic for you to be able to do? Because everyone has different resources. Everyone has a different bandwidth for what they're capable of treating in their home. And especially in dogs with diabetes, it's a commitment for the rest of that dog's life. You've got to be working and having a good relationship with your primary veterinarian for that management.
So we're going to go ahead and have a commercial, and maybe we'll do a review when we come back from commercial at some point. Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So then I was like, wait a minute, that's spaghetti. That's not pizza. It didn't make any sense.
The public.
It do definitely look uncomfortable. I'm all about keeping it authentic. And if your authentic reaction was like
authentically that, awkward,
then that's...
Oh, that's the name of my new band, is Authentically Awkward.
I would absolutely...
Yeah, that's it. Come to... Thank you.
Is it a bunch of people like standing 6 feet or more apart, kind of staring at their feet or their phones?
It's
and
just me playing every instrument at the same time and none of them well.
I'm in. Tell me where to buy the tickets. I'll be there. Like, is it an emo vibe? Because I want to dress right.
Ooh. Of course it would be.
Yeah, I'll wear my new outfit that my sister-in-law picked out.
I would love to welcome you back with another review.
All right.
Good deal.
Do we have another dog name?
Someone else bought this dog, but then returned him. You got a used dog, Charlie Brown.
Well, you're my dog now, Snoopy. I'll show you to your new home.
Snoopy? Yeah. What? Snoopy.
I also really like Snoopy. Maybe Snoopy's my favorite fictional dog.
You've got choices now.
Oh no. He's just so sassy. Well, but he doesn't even speak
anything.
But that's the thing. You can just tell from his face and I identify with that.
Our product is Wellbeing, is the name of the manufacturer or the name brand. I forgot the word I was trying to go for there. We'll go with manufacturer. Great. Wellbeing Blood Sugar Gold for dogs. Healthy blood sugar levels, pancreas and liver function, Devil's Club, veterinarian formulated herbal supplement. And it's brown and weird. It comes in like a weird tincture bottle.
Oh, yeah. Did it say devil?
Yes. Devil's Club.
Give a pet good glucose levels? Is that what it's...
Yes. So it has this concoction of herbs. One is called Devil's Club root
bark. That makes more sense. Okay.
One is called Gymnemia leaf, if that makes any sense. Then we have goat's rue herb in there and dandelion root.
I know what a dandelion is.
And burdock root, which is actually related to Murdoch. He knows your cat.
I would have thought the devil root actually would have been more Murdoch speed.
That could be true.
Yeah.
So Snoopy left a 1-star review. It says, "My cat absolutely hates this," is the name. And I'm going to apologize in advance for this, okay? It's going to get graphic.
Oh.
Okay. Really disappointed in this purchase. says it's supposed to smell and taste like bacon. It doesn't at all. It smells awful. My cat spits most of it out. I get half the dose in her mouth, the other all over her face, and then on me. She actually starts to throw up a little bit while I'm giving it to her. So not only do I have this smelly medicine on me, but I've got my slimy cat vomit on me too. Since I started giving this, she won't even eat her food. I don't know if they change the way it tastes or if it upsets her stomach, but this product's terrible.
I think that could have been written from one of my clients, because I tell you what, cats are challenging to medicate, and they do not like anything that does not taste delicious. They also do not like anything that they are not choosing to partake in.
Yeah.
So not alone. My cat loves bacon, to be fair.
My cat will eat anything.
She'll steal it off the plate.
Oh, my cat is uninterested in bacon at all.
Wow.
So I just thought that bacon was a weird choice. Like, Snoopy really wants this cat to have it. Like, it's throwing it up actively. And he's like, no, take this medicine.
This is a bit of a non-sequitur, but there is a meeting that is for ophthalmologists that is literally all about how to medicate cats and what can we do to medicate them any other way than by mouth, because they hate it.
Well, I mean, what are they suggesting? I assume, like, suppository is not going to be any easier.
I don't think that that would be preferred by the cats.
Dermal.
Yeah, transdermal. So you can get a lot of things compounded and put on the ear. The question is, are those things going to be efficacious? So then you have to do studies to figure out, okay, are they actually getting the dose that they need to be getting if you do it transdermal?
I think a lot more cats wouldn't go unmedicated if it became suppository.
Oh,
only.
Yeah. Certainly. So let's talk about, like, how we do medicate for diabetes.
So dogs, the mainstay of treatment is going to be insulin. Typically, what a general practitioner veterinarian is going to do is start with a dose of an insulin that would be given after eating twice a day. And then they're going to try and figure out, is that an effective dose? You calculate it and then you verify. So within a couple weeks, they're usually going to invite that pet back to the clinic for something called a glucose curve. And a glucose curve is when you take measurements of that pet's blood glucose throughout the day to see what's the highest that they go. What's the lowest that they go? Are those within safe and tolerated ranges? And do we need to change this pet's insulin dose based on where their glucose is going?
I know with people sometimes who have diabetes, like, changing their activity levels and diet and stuff like that helps with diabetes. Some people wind up not having to be on insulin long term.
It actually is pretty similar with cats. When you have more of a type 2 type of diabetes, and just like that wouldn't necessarily work for every diabetic human. That's not going to necessarily work for a juvenile that's a child that's diagnosed with a type 1 diabetes. You can't out-exercise or out-diet that type of diabetes. But if it's a type 2, where insulin resistance is the biggest component of it, those things can definitely improve. There's a few different things that we know improve that, exercise being a huge one. There are lots of lifestyle changes that can go into making insulin work better. When it comes to a dog, for instance, a lot of studies that are being done on what the primary reason for diabetes is, we do know that obesity is a risk factor for diabetics in dogs, although it is not as a simple causation there. Genetics is a huge factor. I know I've seen that with certain breeds that seem to be very prone to developing diabetes. It's thought largely that there is some sort of immune-mediated attack that is happening on the pancreas that's resulting in that loss of insulin. But there's a lot of research and not necessarily mechanisms that are totally worked out at this point.
So in talking about measuring glucose and going in for the curves and stuff, we actually just had a client a couple of weeks ago that had a dog with diabetes, needed cataract surgery. And this client is a human physician. And as he was talking to our other doctor, he was just floored to hear that veterinarians are comfortable keeping the blood glucose in a much wider range for animal patients than human physicians are comfortable for their human patients. So can you touch on a little bit why that happened?
We tend to accept a wider range. And some of that has to do with practicality and some of that has to do with physiology. So one of the important things that we're looking at when we're measuring those curves, whether that's something that's being done in an office or being done at home, is we don't want to push that patient into a state where they're hypoglycemic and they're becoming dangerously low on their glucose. And insulin is not as effective and it's not as tightly worked out in our domestic species as it is in humans. So when we're picking doses, a short-term high glucose is less dangerous than a short-term low glucose. So if we have to pick, okay, is this patient, is their low going to be too low? Is their high going to be too high? We just want to make sure that they're not going too low either. Some of the factors that have to do with that in regulating human insulin doses is it's a lot easier for most people to check their own glucose than it is for them to check their dog's glucose. So they're able to just get more data points for figuring out what the perfect level of insulin dosage is. The other big factor is the types of insulin that we're using. And humans get human insulin. Dogs get a lot of times human insulin, or they're getting insulin that's been created by another species. And so they're not getting dog insulin. It might be labeled for dogs, but it's not the same molecule as what a dog produces. And so the how effective that insulin is going to be different. And then how long we're managing the patient for is a little bit different. With dogs just naturally having a shorter lifespan than humans, you're not necessarily treating that patient for another 20 to 50 years.
Like, what can we monitor at home?
Smell the pee.
One of the easiest things for owners to be able to recognize is clinical signs. So one of the things that they pick up on pretty quick if their pet's becoming unregulated is, are they urinating a lot more and are they drinking a lot more? And again, that goes back to they have more glucose that's spilling over into their urine. So they're urinating more. The ways that we measure it more accurately, the best is going to be going into your vet for a glucose curve, especially if they're using glucometers that are calibrated for dogs. You can get glucometers calibrated for dogs and do your own glucose curve at home, but that becomes challenging for some owners because it does require some sort of skin prick, whether that's on the paw pads or on the ear. Talk to your veterinarian first about what mechanism they recommend if you're going to check at home. We do sometimes use Freestyle Libres, which are a glucose monitor that you can attach directly onto the skin, and it's got a little needle and a sensor that it can consistently measure the glucose. Those are calibrated for humans, so you have to take that with a grain of salt. For most people, that's going to be monitoring clinical signs and having regular lab work.
So, and it, Nessie kind of touched on this a little bit earlier with people, but like, what are some other ways in addition to insulin that can help pets that get diagnosed with diabetes?
Diet's going to be a huge part of that. There are specially manufactured diets that are made specifically for diabetic patients where they're getting a larger percentage of the calories from protein and fats rather than from carbohydrates. So that's going to lead to overall lower glucose levels. So it's less taxing for the body to secrete insulin. So you're not running into as many insulin resistance issues and it's a little bit more stable so you can get to more stable insulin doses.
Just don't be like Scooby and have that on auto ship and then you have 20 bags
right.
of food. Like, yeah. So just, you know, be careful with that.
Yeah.
Exercise is something that can be really helpful. This is tends to be most helpful when we're talking about cats, and we can't forget about cats because they are just as important of a pet as dogs are. If you have a cat that's been diagnosed with diabetes and it's not too severe and it's not yet insulin dependent, and sometimes even if they do end up on insulin, you can really improve or even reverse that diabetes by becoming really regulated with what that pet eats, with weight loss, because obesity is a huge risk factor for development of diabetes in cats, and exercise. We're not just talking about exercise for weight loss, although that's important. Exercise increases our insulin sensitivity. If you can reduce some of that insulin resistance that ends up as being the reason for the diabetes, if you can sensitize those receptors to insulin, you can really decrease the clinical signs or potentially even put that into remission. When we're talking about dogs, that's not a realistic goal, a cure of diabetes or remission of diabetes. However, anything that you can do to increase insulin sensitivity is going to result in having to give lower insulin doses over time and more stable insulin doses where you're not just increasing constantly. And so again, that goes to having more stable blood glucose, which you can achieve through low carbohydrate diet, being strict about diet and only giving food at the times when you're supposed to be giving insulin, because those treats throughout the day are spiking blood glucose and leading to more unstable glucose levels.
What? Why are you screaming at me?
So that does bring me to our next review. You can on Amazon purchase urine testing strips for your animals.
Sure.
A lot of people were using it to try and monitor their pets' glucose levels and things like that. Who do we have here?
Next review is going to be from Clifford, the big red dog.
Hi, my name is Emily Elizabeth, and this is Clifford, my big red dog.
I love Clifford.
You love them all.
I might have been too hasty when I picked Scooby, because I've got some core memories with Clifford, too.
Right. So Clifford might be, we're just replacing the favorite as we go along.
You know, Clifford also must have had a metabolic disorder. Like, that dog was too big.
I mean, a little, the right size for Hux, I think.
Pituitary disorder.
Yeah, he probably had a pituitary gland disorder.
So this is by the brand Kit for Cat, which I thought was a very cute
name. That's very cute.
And it is checkup glucose urine testing strips for cats or dogs for the detection of glucose levels, which feels like they just repeated the same thing twice.
I can already tell this isn't going to go well.
This is a 1-star verified purchase. Clifford's title of his review is ?
Sure.
No. So, very confused. Okay. I found the details of the analysis outcome very confusing. All I wanted to know was if my dog had a UTI. This was the second test form I bought, and the other one was the same. I wish they made it like a pregnancy test. Yes or no? I cannot recommend this product. He's like, why didn't they just make it like a pregnancy test? Yes, you have it. No, you don't have it. Instead, it's all these squares and colors, and I don't know what any of them mean.
I'm sure his veterinarian would love to help him answer that question.
You just pee on the stick and wait 10 minutes, and they're like, yep, UTI. Go on and see your veterinarian for some antibiotic.
Having been on the diagnostic side of trying to answer the question of does this pet have a UTI, totally agree, not realistic. You could have like a normal versus not normal of like, that ain't normal. He's got to go in.
I like that he was big enough to be like, I did 2 different brands. I don't know what either of them mean, so I don't recommend that.
This is K-E-T. What is P-H? Yeah. The big, like, I've run your analysis test many, many times, and I still will look at the printout. I just take it right to the doctor. I'm like, I don't know what this means. I can tell you if it's like 2+ cocci means that there might be meds coming. That's all I got.
I just like panic whenever I have to read a strip, because each of those little boxes has to be read at a different time. So some of them are like 15, 30 seconds. Some of them are 2 minutes. And trying to time all those out, like I know that they're in top to bottom and like increasing time, so you can just go from the top to the bottom. But when you put me on that kind of a time crunch, I'm gonna panic just a little bit.
I'm surprised that Murdoch hasn't come to investigate any of this situation.
Yeah, Murdoch's locked up. That's why.
Okay.
That was intentional.
Yeah. Well, he's being very quiet about being locked up, so that's good.
Is there certain species or specific breeds that get diabetes more often than others?
Those are great questions, and those are questions that are currently being investigated and being answered by, you know, internal medicine specialists and lots of research groups. We do know that there does seem to be a genetic component, specifically when we're talking about dogs, that it does seem to run in certain families and it does seem to run in certain breeds. In my experience, I see a lot of miniature schnauzers with diabetes, see a lot of Labradors with diabetes. When it comes to other potential lifestyle factors, obesity tends to be a risk factor that is seen a lot. That also has its own genetic risk factors, though. So the combination of things that are genetic, things that may be going into lifestyle, potential autoimmune disease components of it are being investigated. You can induce diabetes as well. Patients that are on long-term steroid use can end up having diabetes if they're at high doses of steroids long-term. So that's something that, for instance, when we're treating immune-mediated disease in patients, we utilize steroids because they're so effective. And then we try to lower the dose and try and get them on other types of non-steroidal immunosuppressants so we don't run into those risks of diabetes development.
When you do run into like those schnauzers and labs you were talking about and you have a diabetic cataract, is that more of an urgent situation to get it repaired as opposed to a regular cataract?
That's a great question. Doesn't necessarily have to do with the breed, although I see a lot of miniature schnauzers with diabetic cataracts. Just the presence of a diabetic cataract in general is something that we're going to try and move pretty quickly on, as safe as is realistic for that patient. So sometimes we do have to choose between, do we go to cataract surgery or do we focus on our diabetic management if it's a newly diagnosed diabetic and we have other metabolic disorders or other health issues that we have to get regulated before we do surgery. But what makes diabetic cataracts a little different than other types of cataracts that we see most commonly is it's essentially a swollen lens. So you have this lens, which is the structure on the inside of the eye that focuses light on the retina. That's where the opacity is. And when glucose goes into that lens and gets trapped in that lens, then you end up with water or the fluid on the inside of the eye also moving into that lens. And the lens has a capsule around it. And that capsule is only so thick and so robust. So what happens initially is proteins from that lens start to leak out. That creates a lot of inflammation in the inside of the eye that can go on to cause other problems. But that lens can rupture. And so if we have a lens capsule rupture, where that lens is just swollen to the point of breaking and the inside of the eye is exposed to all that lens material, the prognosis for being able to get that cataract out of there well and get an artificial lens in without a ton of inflammation starts to go down. So if I am looking at a patient and they have what's called an intumescent lens, which means a really swollen lens, I'm going to try and move to that surgery, ideally even within a few weeks if we can, to reduce that risk of a lens capsule rupture and give that patient a better prognosis for cataract surgery.
Can diabetes occur at any time of life?
It depends a little bit on the underlying cause for that diabetes. Middle-aged to older patients are definitely going to be more at risk of developing it. I've seen some dogs that have diabetes at 3 or 4 years old. I've seen a dog, I think, that was diagnosed at age 2. I think it had bad pancreatitis and its pancreas was really damaged to the point that the insulin production couldn't recover. So it ended up as a diabetic. With cats, I've also seen some younger cats that have had diabetes, you know, in the 5 to 6 range. Which is not really old for a cat by any means. Really? In those particular situations, obesity and being sedentary are just huge factors. And I definitely can sympathize. Having cats and keeping cats well exercised is challenging, especially indoor cats. And I'm a big proponent of keeping cats indoors, but it's challenging to get them all the exercise that they really normally would have if they were living the natural feline lifestyle, if you will. So I ended up getting a cat wheel for one of my cats, and it does work. Like he gets on it and he will run full force. But playing with your cat, you know, getting them up and moving, finding the things that they like to do that get them up and moving is going to help with insulin sensitivity. And then feeding them appropriately to help manage weight is another really, really big thing that you can do for cats.
How did you get him to use the cat wheel? Did you just put him on it and he went?
I smeared Churu all over it. So, like, shout out to Churu. If they would like to sponsor me, they're more than welcome because I recommend their stuff constantly. When we talk about, like, for instance, diabetic ketoacidosis or DKA, a lot of times what tips patients from being a well-controlled diabetic into DKA is going to be some other systemic disease. So systemic disease of any variety is going to increase insulin resistance and is going to make diabetes much more difficult to manage. A patient can go from managed to unmanaged very quickly because they develop another health issue. It was common on ER to have a patient with DKA and a known diabetic. And while we're doing diagnostics to try and figure out what's going on with that patient, we find something like, I've seen Pyometra tip a dog into DKA, which is a pretty bad infection that's associated with the uterus. I've seen pancreatitis dip a dog into DKA. So when owners are managing their diabetic pets, another part of that is making sure that we're kind of looking at all systems, because diabetes is a disease that really affects pretty much every body system.
So it's cyclical.
Absolutely.
We kind of touched on some of the symptoms of diabetes, the excessive drinking, weight gain, weight loss, things like that. When someone starts to see these signs, like when should they take their pet for an evaluation with their vet?
Sooner the better.
Yeah, the sooner the better.
When you start noticing your cat's acting a little off or your dog, it wouldn't hurt, even if you wind up that wasn't the case. It's better to just go.
Yeah, I think there's, as someone who's had pets, I think there you have that moment where you're looking at your pet and you're like, huh, that's weird. And then it happens again and you're like, okay, that's definitely weird. And when you get to that point when you're like, oh no, that's a real thing that I'm seeing. That's a real observation. That's when it's time to make an appointment. There's also the time that you make an appointment with your primary veterinarian. And there's a time when you pack up and you go to the ER.
What are some things that can help a person and their vet like recognize diabetes early?
I think having regular blood work monitored. A lot of veterinarians will recommend having annual blood work done. And that's something that is really helpful just simply from the fact that our pets can't talk to us. They can't tell us, hey, I am thirsty constantly. I am noticing that I get a little lightheaded when I stand up too quickly. There are little things that would send us to our doctor pretty quickly that we wouldn't be able to pick up on our pets because they can't verbalize that to us. So one of the ways that we ask our pets how they're feeling is we do blood work fairly regularly and look for little changes before they're big changes. Now, that's not always going to be foolproof because it takes less than a year for diabetes to show up in some cases. So you're not necessarily going to catch it. Checking your dog's weight is really important too and really helpful. So whether you're doing that home or you're doing that with your veterinarian, knowing how much your dog should weigh when they're at an ideal in an ideal body condition, and then trying to maintain that with how much you feed them and how much they exercise them, not only helps reduce one of those risk factors that goes into diabetes, but it also is a really good indicator. If your pet's losing weight, but you're not trying to put them on a diet, and if your pet is gaining weight, and you're not explicitly trying to get them to gain weight, that's a good indicator that we may need to change something about that pet's diet to keep them in a more ideal range.
I have one for a insulin syringe. Who is it?
This is going to be from Pluto.
Pluto.
Happy birthday, Pluto.
I have no strong feelings about Pluto. I was just saying, I don't love every fictional dog. I loved the last three or four or however many it was. And I'm not obsessed with fictional dogs.
Well, that's healthy. We don't necessarily expect you to be. So we're going with Pluto then. The brand is Brandzig.
Brazing.
I feel like it sounds better when you act like you had a little pump to
or
it,
if you're like sneezing, like brazing.
These are U40 pet insulin syringes, 29 gauge, half inch needle, 100 pack. There's a lot of numbers on there.
Important numbers.
It says a half cc, half inch pack. So I might have flubbed that a bit. Anyway, they're pets. Off-brand syringes. Here's your one-star review, verified purchase, from Pluto, called Hard to Remove Needle Cover Without Sticking Yourself.
Uh-oh.
Use for insulin injections. Unlike other brands, difficult, in all capitals, to remove needle cover without sticking yourself, which hurts, and if used, could contaminate the insulin.
Yes.
If you, too, have almost 100 left, try wrapping red needle cover with several thicknesses of paper towel. Carefully and slowly twist off the red cover. I've not had this problem with other brands.
That's too much work. My compliance would drop quickly.
How are you sticking yourself taking a cap off?
Yeah, that sounds like user error to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm trying to like, here we are, the syringe, and I'm taking the cap off and I'm like, whoa!
I have had insulin needles poke through caps before.
Yes, which same.
You wouldn't think that a tiny little flimsy needle like that would be strong enough to poke through a cap. Yet I've seen it many times. So I still don't know how you get to that.
But if you just take several paper towels and layer them to pull the needle off.
Yeah,
you won't stick yourself because it hurts. And then every time she sticks herself, she's like, well, I can't use this needle now, because she doesn't want to contaminate.
I don't think you're saving any money at this point if you're going through like four insulin syringes and because you keep contaminating them. It might be better to just go up a notch in quality.
Right. There was pictures of people with a syringe like side by side with a brand name one. And they're like, I don't think this looks right.
Yes. I was just going to say the thickness of the syringe is going to be important as well.
I would like to add in another review, as I had promised, that vial protector that I mentioned before the lady who kept dropping her insulin.
Yes.
Do we have another name?
Todo.
Todo.
Todo, darling. Oh, I got you back. You came back.
Lovely.
Did that cut out really bad for anybody else?
Yes.
Okay.
Did it? Oh, good. You guys saved your ears.
Listen, you could open for Authentically Awkward.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to sing in that very same voice. So for Todo, we have a review from the brand
Gesundheit?
It's APDTEK in all capitals. Yes, exactly.
That sounds like some sort of like home security company.
It is called an insulin vial protector case for 10 mil short vials, anti-break insulin case holder, convenient insulin bottle protector sleeve for diabetic travel. In blue.
What's it made of?
Silicone.
It is a 5-star verified purchase. Ooh. So we're ending this on a high note.
All right.
Toto loves
some positive.
And it's called You Need This.
All right.
Starting strong.
If you're anything like me, you need this item. I've dropped my dog's insulin so many times before I bought this.
Is this the same person that kept dropping? I know it's Toto. Or is this just that common of a problem? I didn't know.
I didn't either. The review for the Vetsilin came off of Chewy. Well, this review came off of Amazon. So if she did, she changed her username.
Okay.
But it could be she got tired of breaking her insulin and went and got a case for it. Or there's just too many dog paws out here trying to handle insulin bottles.
That is, I'm certain, the bigger issue is dog paws are not well equipped for drawing up anything in a syringe.
But it looks like once you put this like silicone cover on, they have much more grip. And so you don't even need thumbs anymore. Are your paws not working out? Let me tell you what you can do. These human-shaped gloves.
So that you now have five fingers
dexter's thumb.
I mean, is that not what Goofy is out here doing?
Yeah.
I think it is. Okay. If you guys have any questions in any kind of way for Dr. Spears, you can always email us. We can forward it to her as needed.
And talk to your vets. One of the best things that you can do for any pet that you have a very good relationship with the veterinarian that you've picked. If you don't feel like you have a good relationship with your veterinarian, you can always find a veterinarian that you do click with, maybe a little bit better. But having that relationship where you trust them and where they trust you at both of your goals is for the best well-being for that pet. Goes a long way. And so that's my number one bit of advice.
Wonderful advice.
Good advice.
We are going to have a fun AI theme song for this episode.
She doesn't manage diabetes, but she finds it all the time.
If you are a pet owner listening to this and you want to learn more about your pet, it can be difficult sometimes to distinguish which websites have accurate information and which websites will offer you dangerous advice. One of the best resources out there is going to be Veterinary Partner. Now, we aren't sponsored by them or anything, but that website has articles written by specialists specifically for pet owners. So if you're going to get on Google, definitely get on Veterinary Partner.
I love Veterinary Partner. One day they're going to reach out to us and be like, hey, you guys mention us enough that we would like to be part of your world.
That'd be awesome.
Yes.
I don't know.
No. That would be great.
Little Mermaid.
And Churu. No. Okay. This is me officially asking for your support.
All right. You guys know to find any of our resources in our show notes. The rest of our handles and things are there as well. Email us. We like dog pictures. We'll look at your dog. Other than that, we'll see you in our next episode. Okay, bye.
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 Dr. Stacy Spears, true beautiful healer, fixes pet signs on a daily. Sometimes she finds a case of diabetes. So tell everybody.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.